What is up? What is going on, everybody? If you've listened long enough, you know there's no magic here, just a lot of mediocrity. But we'll try it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Three Cool. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me, Brad Miller.
What up? I think you're selling yourself a little short, or maybe you're selling us short. We are definitely the prestige when it comes to the magic trick. So I don't know where you fall on that, Ethan, but Mike and I are going to fall on that side.
Like most of my tricks I've tried to sell in my life, I've just forgotten that part. So I sell the first two steps and forget the prestige. And as you said, Mike Duranik.
I mean, you know, you might be the reveal at the end. You've got to bring something back, right? And
true.
Yeah, we've brought this back in person, so maybe we're all the prestige.
We have. We have done it. No beating around the bush here. We were talking about The Prestige, 2005. Christopher Nolan, good Lord, I don't know. Outside of his first one that I will never watch and have no plans to.
Memento?
There was one before that, even.
Oh.
I like Memento. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, Memento. We've done almost all of the Christopher Nolan films. We've gotten a lot of them knocked out. This one, as I said last week, is a movie we've talked about a ton on this show and just have not gotten to. Had the opportunity this month to do it, and here we are closing out the month of October with my pick. So let's get into it, guys. I'll ask you the question. Brad gets a little different version of this question this month, or this week. But what was your first experience with The Prestige? Was it in a theater back in 2005? Did you catch it later? What did you bring into this rewatch for the podcast? And if it is your first time seeing it, did you know anything about it? What did you bring into this first viewing for the show?
Well, for me, I picked this up at Walmart in West Lafayette in 2000, probably 7 would be my guess, on DVD, and didn't know anything about it. In fact, as I pulled the DVD out, you know, it said right on the cover from the creator of Batman Begins, I believe. And so the thing that probably caught my attention was that. And then I saw Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman and said, well, let's give this a look. And so, yeah, that was the first time that I had watched it was on DVD, and have watched it a number of times since, and was very excited to get to bust the old DVD out to watch it this time.
My first watch was two nights ago, and it was a rental from the Penharris Madison Library.
Oh, did you know anything about it before besides what we've said?
I knew it was a Christopher Nolan movie, and I thought it was about magic. Outside of that, no, I didn't really know anything.
My first experience was on DVD as well. Is your DVD old enough that it's got the little safety locks on the side of it that you have to pop open? So did mine when I rewatched it this morning. So that's how far back this goes. It had to be, I don't know the exact thing, but it had to be that I bought the DVD in response to, you know, loving Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and seeing Inception, really enjoying that, and then deciding, now I'm going to go back. This guy, I like this guy's movies. Let's check out the rest. So I think I got this and Memento at the same time. Probably did like a double feature one afternoon with my stepbrother, which is a wild. If you've now seen both of these, that's a lot to put your brain through in one afternoon, watching Memento and this back to back. But I did it, and then rewatched it again today. I have no idea how many times I've seen this. It's quite a bit, though. I've always really enjoyed this one. Not 25. Don't worry, Brad. I'm still terrified of what Brad's opinion of this movie is.
I don't have to watch The Greatest Showman now because I feel like I've already seen it. It's got to be almost the same thing. Like,
you know, The Greatest Showman did come out 5 years ago in December. We'll talk about that in another month.
Great.
Prepare yourself.
Great.
But focusing on The Prestige, and before Brad tells me whether or not he enjoyed this movie or whatever his true feelings are, we have to play a little game first. It's a Rotten Tomatoes game, which you'll be a part of, but Mike did beat me when we did it for The Social Network. So Mike, you will go first guessing what the score is of The Prestige. Brad will have the chance to snipe you, and it looks like you are already putting on the works here to make us think that you haven't already checked the score.
Yeah, I gotta have to like really do a Brad Miller here. I need to do a long monologue. I text my buddy Aaron Sorkin, asked if he could write one for me that would be, you know, meaningful to really draw Ethan in and distract him from my cheating and, you know. I was kind of rolling my eyes there because I forgot that I had to do this. And I don't know. So there's where I think that this movie should be, but then there's where I think that it is. And I think that it's actually a lot lower than you or I would want it to be. Then I don't know where Brad's at yet because we haven't really talked about the movie. Because I don't remember this movie getting any buzz when it was out. In fact, I do distinctly remember when I bought the movie having not heard of it. This movie came out the same year. I later found out this was like an Armageddon Deep Impact, right? There was an Edward Norton movie, The Illusionist.
Not good.
Not good. I also watched that around the same time. So I am going to go, I think this is by far the lowest movie that we had this month, and I'm going to put it at an 80 and let Brad decide if it's if he's going to go over or under. But I'm going to split the certified fresh 40-point range right in the middle.
So I'm going to, I guess, first talk about the other. You mentioned The Illusionist, and then there's another movie with Jim Carrey that's some sort of...
The Incredible Burt Wonderstone?
I don't know if that's what I'm...
Ace Ventura.
I don't know if that's what I'm referring to, but there's one... Is there one where he puts on a magic-type show, or...
That's... Like, with him and Steve Carell?
That doesn't sound right.
Okay.
This was...
I hope you weren't comparing those. Thank you.
There's something along, like it's a one word movie, kind of like this one.
The Majestic?
Maybe, yes. Okay. Yes. So The Majestic, yeah. So like, I think in my mind, what The Prestige was going to be was a combination of The Illusionist and The Majestic.
Okay.
And that's, so I actually came in very impressed by the film because I think it was better than both of those. But where I think I'm, Mike, your points actually are kind of pointing me a different direction because you guys both love this film, and for you to put it at 80, as much as you guys have talked about enjoying it, kind of makes me think that maybe it was underwhelming. I don't know that my number would be much different. I think I would be somewhere in that 78, 79 to 81, 82 range. And I'm still talking because I don't know which way I'm going to land. I'm going to follow your lead, Mike, and I'm going to put it at 79 because I think that we might be surprised by it, even though I think I'm going to come in on the... If I win this, I'm going to come in on the side that I think that number is unfair.
So let me say this. The audience is right where I'm assuming Mike and I are at. It's at a 92% for the audience. We've had some pretty close numbers recently. This week is where we're going to get into the discrepancy, and you were right. Lowest we've had this month. It's at a 76.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow. By the critics. So you were on the right path of where this
I
was at.
I just couldn't bring myself to put it in the 70s.
Yeah,
putting it at an 80 hurt me enough.
So you are.
I thought it was going to be easier, and I thought Mike was going to land somewhere in like that mid-80s range, and I was definitely going to go 84. But when he said 80, that's kind of right where I was going to go, so...
You already alluded to this, and my next question is always, you know, is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Sounds like, well, actually, I know, across the board, we're all going to say no, but we'll get into why. I am on the side of the audience. It sounds like you're not quite that high. Mike, I think you're probably up there.
Yeah.
This movie is in the 90s for me, for certain. I'll go as far as to say that while this has been a pretty powerhouse month, this is my favorite movie we've done this month. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different because we're recording all in one shot here. I would have this ahead of Gone Baby Gone, even, for me. And it's because I think, like I told Mike this is a movie where sometimes when a movie has such a big twist, it loses itself in the twist. We've talked about things like this before, but you get so locked in on what the twist is or something like that. I remember the first time I saw it, and I'll be interested with Brad's perspective because this was his first time. Yes, I wanted to know what the answer was. I wanted to know how he was pulling the trick off. That was important to me. But what I thought this movie did so well and does so well is wrap you into this rivalry and the story and where are we going to go. And I think it's a great choice to do it in flashbacks. Because you already know that, well, he's died, and now this guy's in jail. What more could there be besides just telling it? So you want to know how he does the trick, but you also have this sense of there has to be something even beyond that, but you don't even know what question to ask. So that drags you through the first time you saw it, and then, like I said, the first time I saw it, I had to sit and think, like, wait, what was the... So he's bad, and it... Wait, like, you know, you have to... And then the times I've rewatched it since, it's gotten better and better, and I really focused this time on, did they slip up? I don't think they did at all. In fact, I think what they do so well is tell you the entire time what the twist is, but in a way that doesn't give it up if you've never seen it before. And I, again, like I said, I'm curious how you think on that, not knowing really much about the movie at all. But they really do hammer home, like, what it is. But you'd have no way of knowing.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, because you haven't seen this before. So I'm kind of with you, Ethan. Every time I watch this, I think what makes it so that I would put it in the low 90s, probably maybe upper 80s, but certainly higher than 76, is that... For me, it was I'd say pretty close to mind-blowing the first time I watched it. I was so entertained. It was so well done. And then it has held up on rewatches. And that's a Nolan thing. A lot of Nolan movies that have a hook, I can still rewatch and enjoy them. But this one, maybe more than most, like, it is just, it's entertaining to me even knowing where the hook's coming. But Brad, this was your first time watching it. What did you think?
Well, first, alluding to Ethan's comment about favorite of the month, I hadn't even thought about that, but I think I would actually put it second. Gone Baby Gone, 1, this 2, Martian 3, and Social Network 4. All movies, I mean, I think this was definitely a powerhouse month. I would maybe go back and I'd like to rank our month sometime of where we've landed with films. But as far as rating this, yeah, I think 76 is way too low. I think it was very entertaining. Now, as Ethan, you've pointed out several times, 76 is it's a good number, you know.
Yeah, it's fresh by a mile.
It's pretty high up there, but when you think of The Social Network getting a 96, a 76 is definitely unfair for this. And I guess you come back to it because it's a period piece, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what else holds it back. But as far as the hook, the twist, the plot twist, whatever, like... I guess I don't know how big those were, because I actually saw both of them coming. The two, there's more than two, but I saw Christian Bale playing both parts. I pulled that out, and then I also pulled out Hugh Jackman replicating himself after you see the hats and the cat, all that replicate, and then he's got that gun that he sits down. Like, all of those things, none of those things were a surprise. I was a little bit surprised, slightly, that he was drowning himself every show. I didn't put that quite together until you start seeing, why are they pulling this thing out after every show and taking it quietly through the town? So I kind of noticed those things, too. I thought they got me on a third twist, though, that I didn't see coming, and maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Was Michael Caine with Christian Bale the whole time, fooling Hugh Jackman, or were they just kind of in cahoots at the end? That's the part where I don't know if there was a twist or not, because when I see that bookends it with the same thing where he's doing the magic trick with Christian Bale's daughter, and they're clearly having a relationship, you also see that nod of approval as they leave, Michael Caine's leaving the building and Christian Bale's coming in, and he kind of gives him the nod, and then he goes in and he shoots Hugh Jackman. Like, so I think that he switched sides after that meeting with Hugh Jackman, where he's like, I bought the box, I did all this, and, you know, he realizes that he's kind of working with the bad guy, you know. I think that's when he switched, but there was parts of me that said, was this a third plot twist? Was he in character this whole time really helping Christian Bale to always one-up Hugh Jackman? So I don't know if you guys know the truth on that, but that's where I thought, was this a third plot twist that I didn't see coming until the end?
Yeah. I don't think he changed sides until he realized that he was still alive. Once it became, this is more than professional rivalry and you're trying to get some guy hanged and steal his daughter, that's when he flipped sides. That's just not who he was. I don't think it was the entire movie.
No, I agree with that. I think, yeah, if it was the other way, then it would have been too cute, for sure, because But I do think that part of it was also Michael Caine saying, like, look, I told you the whole time that it was a double. Now, he didn't say, oh, he's got a twin. He didn't know that. But he told him the whole time, like, later in the movie, that's like, I've been telling you. It's the same thing I've been telling you all along. His trick is, it's a stand-in. It's a double. Yep. That's what it is. And so I do think at the end it was like, look, you wouldn't listen to me. You have now made this into something that it couldn't be. You made me complicit in it because I was testifying that he had drowned you. And, you know, so I don't think that there was a third twist there. I do think the first time through, I didn't pick up as quickly the twin thing. The one thing I would say that doesn't hold up, if you know what you're looking for, it's pretty obvious it's Christian Bale playing the other guy.
Yeah.
You know, throughout the movie. But I think the part that on the first watch through I didn't pick up as much as I did on subsequent watch throughs of it was the parts where you can start to see it in the way that they're acting, like with the wife and things like that.
Well, there were two things that gave it away for me this time, and that was the wife's intuition and the way he picked up the little girl at one point in the movie when Fallon picked up the girl. And the way he held her, I was like, okay, that's her dad. Like, there's a way you pick up a child when you like the child or you care for the child or have a relationship with the child. There's another way you pick up a kid when it's your kid. And Christian Bale nailed it. He picked up that kid. I was like, okay. And then also the spouse's intuition of why do they keep saying some days you love me, some days you don't. And then I was like, okay. And then he picked up the girl. So that you're right. They had it in front of you the whole time, especially when what I started looking for is why did they have the scene where they're like, they were so impressed that Chinese guy or whatever Asian nationality he was do that magic trick and that he lived that performance. They hit that home right away. So I was like, okay, so one of these guys is going to follow through and be in character all the time. So then I realized pretty quickly it was Christian Bale. So you're right. From the very beginning, it was right there in front of you. And I wasn't caught off guard by either one 100%. It was visually stunning to see his body in that water and all of those things kind of lined up. Like, because I guess I didn't play that through of like, okay, if he's replicating himself every night, where's this other body going? You know, I didn't really, you know, take that all the way to fruition, but like, I wasn't surprised that that's how he was doing the trick once you saw how Tesla was replicating those things. So I was looking for more twists. Like, was there a twist with Scarlett Johansson? Was there a twist with Michael Caine? And there was. I mean, Scarlett kind of was a double agent there.
Or triple agent, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
So, yeah, like, well, she was playing both sides very well and really, you know, led to a lot of stuff there. So, like, very good movie. I wasn't disappointed that I figured out the twist ahead of time because it didn't take away from the entertainment of the movie for me. And it also, to me, means they weren't too over the top with it, because if it was way over the top, you never figure it out. Like, so it made sense with everything they presented, and I like twists like that.
And I think my favorite part about it is that, I guess if you want to call it the third twist, the twist is who's the protagonist and who's the antagonist. Because even with all of that, I can tell you, I can sit down and tell you, I could have ruined it for you, Brad, just so you know, Christian Bale has a twin. You still would have watched the entire movie from the, like, yes, knowing, like, well, he didn't actually kill him at the beginning, I don't think. But you still would have watched that entire movie from the perspective of, he messed up and killed Hugh Jackman's wife, that's not cool. Like, he treated his own wife terrible, or someone, he allowed his wife to be treated so terribly that she killed herself. Like, that all still sets up as Christian Bale is the worst of these two men. And then within the final, like, 15 minutes of the movie, when he's actually Lord Caldwell. That's the one I could have never seen coming, and maybe I should have. I don't know if you did. But the fact that he is this guy taking his daughter. Like, that next step, then all of a sudden it's this flip of, like, you're a terrible person. Like, this isn't cool. Like, you are no longer the sympathetic, you lost your wife 10 or 15 years ago, however long that was supposed to be, you're now just a psychopath and a terrible person. And then trying to figure out, too, because then once you start to kind of piece together, like there's two of them, trying to figure out which one was doing which thing at which time. Mm-hmm. Like, who, which one was Alfred and which one was Freddy? Because then when you play it back, Freddy is the worst of the two people, right? He is arrogant and he is willing to do something dumb enough to get himself arrested. But up until the final conversation they have, you don't really know. Is it the better one that's in jail and he just couldn't resist going and seeing the trick? Or is it the brother that's in jail? Like, you don't fully know right up until he says, I loved Sarah, he loved the... I don't remember what Scarlett Johansson's name was in the movie. But until he admits that, even that's a little bit of a twist of, like, which one are we saving here? Because at the end of the day, if you're going to have one of them survive, you want it to be the one that fell in love with Sarah and had the family and loved his daughter and did all that. And even in the conversations they have when he comes back and he's cloning himself, there's one scene where it's Fallon is getting screamed at from Christian Bale. You're supposed to be smarter than him. You're supposed to figure this out. And then the next scene, all of a sudden, it's Christian Bale saying, you know, I don't know how he's going to do it, and we're done. They haven't revealed it yet, so you don't know that it's two different guys. But again, one of those guys is level-headed and just wants to go home and be with his daughter because he lost his wife. The other guy can't live this rivalry down. And so right up until the end, you don't know which one you've lost. And I think that stuff is the better twist than simply just, it was a twin. And that's what sends this movie over the top for me.
Yeah, I mean, all of this was said in the context of, was this score fair? And clearly no. Like, I don't know that I have it at the level that you have it, but, you know, if you told me this was an 88, 89, 90, okay, you know, perfect score. I think that it was entertaining. I'd like to watch it again. I didn't have any preconceived notion of, like, I'm going to like this movie or I don't want to like this movie like I did with The Social Network. I didn't want to like it, so I watched it through that lens, and I was very entertained. Even though I was tired when I watched it, I was fighting sleep, but it was entertaining enough for me to stay awake and to enjoy it. So I'd like to watch it again. This will be one that I plan to.
Well, and I'll contend this. I would almost guarantee you that if this movie came out today, it would be a 92.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this was... critics going in and like, okay, buddy, you made Batman Begins, but you don't, this is ridiculous. Like, twins, and actually Hugh Jackman's a bad person, and he's cloning himself and drowning himself, like, calm down, buddy. But over the years, we've grown to love, like, Inception. And, like, that is, people now, they want that hand over fist. Give us the crazy Christopher Nolan, make it crazier, right? So if this came out today, I bet critics would have loved it. I think back then, 24 out of 100 walked out and was like, that's stupid. I don't need that many twists. This was 2 hours and 20 minutes. I didn't need... make it 2 hours and tell me who the bad guy is. I would almost guarantee it would change if it came out today. But that's the reality that it was. It made...
I think something you said there's pretty critical. They did that same loop with those two guys several times, and they probably could have taken one of those loops out. It was a bit repetitive and like, okay, we get it. You're just trying to one-up each other. So I think they could have cut a little bit out, and it might have won some more people over. I don't know that I would call this either one of theirs, you know, it's not on either one of those actors' Mount Rushmores, so clearly there's a little bit of issue with the acting. But overall, it's solid performance across the board from everybody in it. So it's not a shining star in any way, but it's also not a dud in any way for any of them. So I think it's just a really good movie. And I think your point, too, if it came out today, it would be rated higher simply because those guys have more clout than they did back then.
Yeah.
You know, even Scarlett Johansson and Michael Caine and everybody.
It is wild. The cast that's in this is crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Nolan has more clout. Bale has more clout.
Mm-hmm.
Jackman has more clout. There's no doubt about that.
And even the shout out, I don't know her name. I didn't look it up, but the girl from The Town that's in this.
Rebecca, like, Hall.
Yeah. Good performance by her as well.
I mean, as of... next year or the spring after, they announced that Hugh Jackman's going to play Wolverine at least one more time and be in a Deadpool movie and officially a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So when that happens, you'll have 6 people that ended up being in a Marvel movie, Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, in this movie in 2005. That's pretty impressive at the time. I think I would have this in Hugh Jackman's, for sure in Hugh Jackman's Mount Rushmore in terms of performance given.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to have Wolverine and Prisoners, I think I would still have above this. But I don't know if I could get two more in terms of performance.
Yeah, given. I guess when I threw that out there, it wasn't a well thought out.
We always ask that question, statement. Though. That's,
But I guess I wasn't necessarily saying performance. I meant, like, this isn't going to go down of one of his four best movies that he's in. At least watching it one time. You know, if it holds up for me and 20 years I still like it, that's going to be a different story, because some of these other films that he's been in, I've had years and years and years and many rewatches to kind of say I love this thing. I want to watch it again to see if any of those flaws show, or you know, what did I miss or what did I not see. That's very redundant. I don't know why I just said both of those, but I think watching it again, if it's just as entertaining, then I could put it up there in his one of his top performances.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is definitely on a Mount Rushmore for Jackman. I mean, I think you got to start picking and choosing which of your 17 versions of Wolverine.
Yeah, I just put it all as one. He is Wolverine.
I mean, for me, it's Logan. There's no question about that. I think Brad's just hesitant because he doesn't want to put this on the Rushmore until after he gets to watch The Greatest Showman.
That's true. December. You don't want to just like go just throwing away a spot this that could be.
This is better than Logan to me, so I guess I'll give it that.
Well, because other than that, I mean, Prisoners, I think you could make an argument, but what other ones are in your mind?
I think Prisoners is his best performance still. I still think that. I think that Prisoners takes it. I think what stood out to me most this time was how impressive their relationship was whenever they pulled up Christian Bale's moments with his wife. That really like killed me this time. I remembered the parts about like you love me today, you don't, and like how they use that, but really thinking about, and then the way that kind of like devolves, because when she first says it, she says, I really love it because there's days that you really love your work and there's days that you really love me, and it makes the days that you love me mean something. And then like right before she kills herself, she's completely flipped to, this is one of the days you don't mean it, and that makes the days you do mean it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like watching, he made a choice of, I'm going to have a career over anything else, and watching how that destroys the people around him. And that's what, I mean, this movie, really, I know this is crazy, I'm talking about a movie about magicians where one of them ends up learning how to clone himself, and twins that cut off their fingers and stuff like that. Really, this movie is about like what rivalry and hatred can do to people. Like, I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last just 3 years, 3-4 years, is no matter what someone has done, it's not worth your energy to hate them. I mean, you'd be pissed. We're always, if someone does something to you, right, you're going to be mad. But, like, spending time in your day hating someone, this is what happens. I mean, not this. We don't end up cloning ourselves and drowning our clones. Well, you might.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe.
I don't know how smart any of you are. If you have that ability, you'd probably make a lot of money. But the damage that it does to every single person, even Scarlett Johansson, her life, you know, she spent however many years. It's hard to really tell how long this movie goes about. At least probably however old that girl is. So the movie probably takes place over a decade, easily. Like, how much time she invested in these men, and she never was cared for. It was, you know, always going at each other. So I think that really came through this time too, and I appreciated just that little nuance to it.
Yeah, one of those last things you said, I mean, you were referring to Scarlett Johansson as never being cared for, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in some ways she was, by the one person that she didn't really know existed, and the twin brother, you know?
Right, so Fallon, yeah.
So there was somebody that loved her and cared for her, and she thought it was somebody else, but and yeah, I guess I'm going to take back my statement after looking through his IMDb. Outside of Wolverine, like, he doesn't have...
Hugh Jackman is a superstar that doesn't have the billing to live up to being a superstar.
Yeah, like, what does he have to, like, really say, you know, take those receipts here, you know, look how good I am.
But he could be, right?
Yes.
And that's the thing. Now, one of the interesting things about this movie is that he had to kind of sell himself on the part, because this was really the first dramatic role that he jumped to do in any mainstream way.
Yeah.
But then you look at this, you look at Prisoners, he clearly, I think, could be an exceptional actor on that broader scale. And you can't even say that he's necessarily been typecast as Wolverine, because I don't think that that's the case. I think he's just happy doing what he's doing. And yeah, occasionally that's going to lead you to a performance like this or like Prisoners. He was not the worst part of Les Miserables. I don't think he was terrible as Jean Valjean in that. But I do think he likes stage performance and musicals, which is why you see him in Les Miserables, you see him in The Greatest Showman. And, you know, I think that he also, as I understand it, does a lot of stage performance and things nature.
Yeah, I mean, he's just happy doing what he's doing. It was a big risk at the time, right? Like, this was a moment. I mean, this could have. It ended up still making money. I think it was like a $40 million budget, made $120 million, so it was at least successful enough. Like, this could have been a really big problem, right, for all these guys. Like, Christian Bale just got Batman, and he was an unknown when he got Batman. Yeah, he had been in things, but that was...
American Psycho, right?
Yeah. So, but that's a pretty big risk. The guy, remember, American Psycho is a cult classic. That is not...
Yeah.
You couldn't have walked up to my grandmother and been like, you know who the new Batman is? Like, it's not Michael Keaton anymore? No, it's the guy from American Psycho. Like that. So he just got that, and now Christopher Nolan is selling him. He's now selling a studio on like, hey, I know we got this Wolverine guy. Have you ever heard of Scarlett Johansson? We're going to make a magic movie. Like, this was a pretty big risk for how it all played out. I think it worked out pretty well. We don't need to talk anymore about Christopher Nolan.
One question I don't think either one of us answered that you asked is, they're either both the protagonist or both the antagonist. I don't know that, I don't think you could point to either one being better than the other. They both got their hands dirty, like they like to say in this movie. And they both pushed each other to get to the point to where they got. Like, I think in the end, we would all say that Christian Bale was probably the better person, because he didn't do some of the things that to where Hugh Jackman took it. But I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I would say they both fall. They're either both equally good and they're just pushing each other to these bad levels, or they're both just equally bad guys that don't know when to stop.
Well, I would say Alfred is the most good of the three men, and then Freddie and Robert Angier are trending way in the other direction.
We can all agree that somewhere in some of those clones was probably a good Hugh Jackman.
But, probably somewhere.
You know. Well, I do.
The one that got shot, he seemed like he was about to say, hey, I would never do that to you. I think he was about to say something really kind.
That's right. That's right.
So are we to believe, though, that the Hugh Jackman at the end is the same Hugh Jackman that found Tesla?
No, because he's a clone of a clone of a clone of a clone.
In fact, I mean, he specifically said, you don't know how hard it is to not know whether right, when this happens, I'm going to be the one in the tank or the one.
And the most important line of the whole movie is, you remember what I said at your wife's funeral? That it's like going home. I lied to you. He told me it was the most agonizing thing anyone could ever go through. The only reason he was willing to do this to himself is because he believed him and was like, oh, it's not that bad. Like, it's how my wife died. It's like going home. Like, this isn't bad. And then you see, when you get the perspective of Christian Bale watching that one die, how horrible. Of course it's horrible. It's drowning. But they wouldn't have known that back in the 1800s. He was all basing this off of, like, this isn't really that bad, and then I get to have this glory, and I'm going to get him back. Like, but it was all a lie.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they both could have been... They were both protagonists in their own way, but they allowed, to your point, their hatred and their rivalry to drive them both to the point where they were both antagonists. And ultimately, probably Michael Caine ends up becoming the most resolved character in that sense.
And I don't even think that Alfred hates Hugh Jackman's character. I think if you really, if you went through with, like, you know, a whiteboard and broke down which scenes Christian Bale is which person, I think Freddy has the rivalry, and Alfred is just so focused on success. He has to be success. His rivalry is with himself.
Mm.
Because when he shows up and breaks his leg and pops out and, like, come see my show across the street, that's definitely not the one that has the wife and kid. That's definitely the other brother. So, like, the one who shot him, that's not the one that has a wife and kid. Or no, he got shot. But the one that had a wife and kid was the one that got shot, right? Because he said, I don't know. Like, he has remorse for what happened. And the reason he says he doesn't know is because the cockier one did it, and he can never know.
So I guess this is where the movie, now that I'm thinking about it, loses me a little bit, is I don't know exactly how cloning works, but I can't imagine that if he's 100 people removed from the original Hugh Jackman, how does he still have enough hatred towards this guy when you're implying that you're going to have the same memory, emotions, feelings, everything in the brain, everything that happened to the original happened to the clone? Like,
it's a throwaway line, but yeah, like, you do have to, that's where we got to suspend the most disbelief, so, because he says, like, which one's my hat? When he's, they're all your hat. They're the exact same. So yeah, I think you do have to go under the assumption that it is
right,
just the exact same, which is how he knows he's going to get shot, right? When he does shoot the clone, and it's that instant, like, no, don't do it, because he knows that that's the plan, but he also has his own that's where it's going to start getting a little wonky, but,
like, well, I think that's the idea, is that it was really more, was it cloning or was it interdimensional? Who knows,
yeah,
right? But
right.
But the long story short is that what we are presented with is that they are identical,
yes,
in every way,
right,
which is the only way that, I mean, think about it. It's the only way, if it was a clone without all of the memories, how would he know to come out and say, here I am, take my bow, right? In that moment, he comes to and he is the same person.
So it must not, I guess they never called it cloning. It must be some sort of time travel where they can be in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, some craziness, and that is probably too where this went from at that time, 90s to 70s. That there's probably enough people that were like, yeah, okay, there's the 100 of him. That's but
now we have, you know, Doctor Strange in the multiverse in the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
right,
and so we're used to these concepts.
Or Christopher Nolan has Tenet, which I think is sitting higher on the tomato meter, and the.
Well, I will say I've tried Tenet twice and not made it past, like, the first 40 minutes, if that. And so, maybe the next time.
Tenet's the only movie, I've seen it 2.5 times, had no freaking clue what happened in the theater, watched it a second time and said, no, I have this, and it's actually a good movie. Got halfway through the third viewing and said, no, I was wrong. I actually don't remember how I made this make sense. But that's a different movie. We'll focus here. We'll wrap it up. Favorite scene from The Prestige. I really liked the moment when I hit play right up until the credits rolled. That was, if I have to narrow it down, I will. It's a cop out, but I do think it's so beautifully done, and I think that there's just not really, like, a chink in the armor when they reveal it. It has to be the reveal, and I think specifically the reveal of, like, what the level of commitment is by the twins. So not just, like you said, you figured that they were twins, but the fact that they cut the other one's fingers off, like, the flip-flopping, the fact that it was every day, right? Because he even asked the question, like, were you the one going in or the one coming out of the wardrobe? We took turn. Like, that's pretty significant, and seeing that all play out, I think, is really, really well done, and it makes the entire movie make sense. Of course there's days where she doesn't feel love, because she's not. It's not her husband. Like, all of that stuff together, just that whole reveal, I think, is great, leading up to then, like, his hanging, it can't be my favorite line, I guess it could be, but it's only one word, but just abracadabra. Ooh. Like, that then just culminating with him getting dropped, and then the gunshot, I think, is the best.
I just realized that he was being honest when he said he didn't know what knot he tied.
Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned that, or if I zoned out during that, but, like, yeah, it totally hit me, like, okay, so the one guy tied the one knot, and then the other guy didn't know
what it was.
I'm sorry that I missed you guys saying that, but it was like light bulb going off, like, oh yeah, I must have been...
See, but that's what we're saying, I think, or what I'm saying with this movie, the intricacies like that, even on rewatch, you just see more and more of that, and realize, just like the trick is in front of you the whole time, right? They're actually not really trying to hide the trick necessarily, certainly not well, but that's what makes this movie so good.
The guy, when he shows him the cloning thing the first time, the guy says to him, you gotta dress it up a little bit so that people have some reason to, like, however he words it, but it's talking about this movie. You gotta give us the little breadcrumbs, because if you had no idea, and then it wouldn't stick. It's going back, and I'm telling you, for as many times as I've seen this, there's not a single moment in this movie where there's a slip-up of, like, now, come on, that's not how... down to, even you said, him hugging his daughter when he's Fallon. Every single detail that they put into Freddy and Alfred is exactly how each one of them should be acting at whichever moment they are supposed to be.
Yeah, in fact, that's the beauty of it, right? Is that it's so obvious that if you know what you're looking for, it's right there.
Yep.
And yet, your mind disbelieves for most of the movie.
Yeah. So that was my favorite scene, just watching them be that committed there at the end.
Yeah, I think that the final scene there that you reference is definitely my favorite as well, so I won't belabor the point. You got anything different, Brad?
I think it's the same thing that you said. It's kind of, it's the reveal of him having a twin, and going through that. You know, I think yours was a little bit more broad than that, but that is my favorite part. Is like, because you've kind of been waiting for this point for the whole thing, and then like it's kind of the Kaiser Sose moment where, you know, I forget the actor's name that drops the coffee mug in The Usual Suspects, but it's like, okay, he's putting it together. Chaz Palminteri,
there you go,
or something like that. It's similar to that, where the reveal of him having a twin, and then, you know, the chopping of the fingers and all of that, like, that definitely comes through as my favorite as well.
Favorite lines? Anything that really stood out?
Yeah, I mean, in light of our entire discussion, I've got the line from Michael Caine, right? And it's the last lines, right? But now you're looking for the secret, but you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to work it out. You want to be fooled. And I think that in light of our entire discussion tonight, that really resonated for me even more so, because that's the beauty in this. Again, they're not hiding it. Certainly for the obsession for Hugh Jackman's character, he was searching for something that was obvious right in front of him that Michael Caine's character had been telling him the whole time, right? But he couldn't handle the simplicity of it. There had to be more.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact line, but it was similar in vein to where he was talking about how simple our world is. And it might have been almost the exact same thing, but I just remember coming back to that as like, this isn't reality. This is the simple part. I don't know if only seeing it the one time, it's not fully coming back to me. Do either of you know what I'm talking about there, where he talks about how simple the world is? It's not this big, elaborate thing. Anyways, like, that's whenever he said that or delivered that line, to me, that's the one that stood out, because it made me just kind of stop and think, like, it became a spiritual question for me. Is the world really that simple, or is it more interstellar? Is it more, you know, heaven on earth and a creator having control over the day to day, you know, like it really got my brain going down that path, and I like when those things happen.
When I was scrolling through to find the exact wording of this, I forgot right at the beginning when her nephew sees the bird. Where's his brother? Like, just the little stuff like that. That's like, it's so painfully obvious, but it's not, because you don't know where to look. My favorite line is, I think I referenced it, but it's when he tells Hugh Jackman that he lied to him, and just, you know, take a minute to consider your achievement. I told you about a sailor who drowned. Yes, he said it was like going home. I lied. He said it was agony. It's just, it's quick, it cuts through, but it's just, again, it shows how invested he was in this hate and this rivalry, and the only little bit of humanity he was holding on to was his wife didn't die in pain, and that he's not sending himself to die in pain. But again, you're missing what's right in front of you, and you're doing this because you're blind to these other things. But a close second would be Abracadabra. It's haunting, it's terrifying. I forgot that they showed her body hanging there, which, I mean, not that a lot of like young people would see this kind of movie at that time, but like it was both of those were very gruesome for what they were. And those were my favorite lines. And that does it, guys. We've done the marathon, like we said. I mean, you guys don't know this because we're releasing them once a week. We just did 4 episodes in a row. We did it all in one shot. We knocked it out for you because we care about you guys. We want this to be just slightly above mediocre. Not the best, but, you know.
Just above.
Listenable. That will do it for The Prestige. Next week, what are we doing next week? We talked about this 4 hours ago. There's
In November, we are leading off with
a movie that's going to be great.
It's
going to
be fantastic. Awesome. And the name of that movie is Ransom.
Ransom. Brad's pick. I know it now because we just talked about it. For the month of November, Ransom. Mel Gibson, Ron Howard directed. I believe Gary Sinise pops up in it. Rene Russo. That sounds like a lot of fun names. It'll be a good time. That'll be next week. This week was The Prestige. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan. We'll see you next time.